Hi, this is Brendan from Bedrock Games and the Bedrock Blog, and I'm here with Joel and Adam, and we're doing, I don't know what episode of what this is, but tonight we're going to be talking about Legend of the Demon Cat. And The Legend of the Demon Cat is a 2017 film directed by Chen Cage. When a demon cat appears and breaks the peace of Chang'an City, causing a series of strange events, poet Bai and monk Kukai, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, join hands to investigate the death of the emperor's concubine by following the trail left by the cat. I guess the first thing to establish is, how did you guys pronounce the monk's name? Because I didn't quite catch it in the
Put us on the spot right away.
Well, no, I'm just saying, you know,
he's got a Japanese name, so you just take every single syllable and pronounce it. So it should, if it's spelled Kukai,
over it too. So it means you hold the U a little bit, like the length of what vowels matters in Japanese. So it's Kukai.
There you go. Easy peasy.
So all right. So, but anyways, what do you guys think of that synopsis? That's the IMDb with a little first sentence added by myself. But did that seem accurate, or did that seem like it's taking liberties with the plot?
I mean, that's the framing, right? I almost want to call the main characters of this movie the framing device for the real plot that's going on, you know? Because the real thing is about the demon cat and its backstory and all the events that happened that kind of led to that. And then we sort of see that through the lens of these two guys, like, investigating it. So, but they don't really have character arcs or anything, right? Like, they're pretty much the same at the beginning and the end. I guess one guy changes his poem a little bit.
Well, he decides not to change it
instead of
burning. I mean, they grow. I think
he goes through a real arc because, I mean, he's the one that really believes in this romance and everything and has his eyes open to just how horrible, you know, reality is.
But, and also they go through the emotions of it all, like those manic scenes where he's going into the past and talking about, you know, like there's a lot of internal change, I think, with these characters.
It's a real sadder and a wiser man kind of moment at the end of this movie. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
Characters don't need arcs in this kind of story either, though, because this is like a mystery. And so it's sort of like, you don't really want Sherlock Holmes. Like, I don't want Sherlock Holmes growing as a person. I want Sherlock Holmes to be Sherlock Holmes from adventure to adventure.
This is very Sherlock Holmesian, definitely.
Yeah, it reminded me of Detective D, I think it was called. Where again, like, the main character doesn't have
change, and that's just basically
100%.
Where it's like the Bond principle, where they undergo dramatic change over the course of the movie, but then there's like a reset button at the end, and the next movie, you know, they're the same guy that they were at the beginning of the previous film.
Money Pundi, I think I'm a new man. I'll never womanize again. Hey, James, how about a highball? You know what? Fix it.
It's off subject, but me and my wife were watching the old Sean Connery James Bonds, and she was keeping track of how many women he slept with, and she was like, oh my god, like it's a staggering number in the earlier movies. I think he has like a mental health issue, actually, in the early James Bond movies. It's so frequent. I guess that's a reasonable breakdown of the storyline. What did you guys think of the movie? Because I know, Joel, this was your first time seeing it, right?
Yeah, this is my first time seeing it. I actually just got done watching it a few minutes ago. It's a lot. This is a big movie. Like, it's not super long, but it's really dense and really fast-paced. I will say, visually, it's an absolute spectacle. This movie's beautiful to look at. It's really varied. It's got like a good consistent tone. Like, it kind of feels like a horror mystery the whole way through, but like, they really take you to heaven and hell in this movie. Like, some of the scenes in the past when they're in the feast, it's like, it's incredibly beautiful and everyone's like happy and smiling. There's all these little chess pieces moving in the background. And then you'll have that scene where the cat breaks into the brothel and just murders everybody and takes the dude's eyes out. And like, that's a pretty shocking moment. And you never know what you're going to expect from scene to scene. So there's a huge variety. All the characters are really lovable. I don't think there's a single character in here that didn't make a really big impact. You know, some of the subject matter is really gruesome in a kind of a fun way. There's just a lot to love about this movie. I really liked this movie. It's one of those movies that it's and I, this happens on a few movies. This happened to me on The Big Lebowski too, where as soon as it was over, I'm like, okay, roll it up again. We got to watch it again.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's I did that. So I watched this twice for this review, which I don't usually do, but I just wanted to see it again. I mean, one thing that really drew me into watching it a second time too, during the very last scene, it's not even really a spoiler because it's the after the plot's over, but when the two of them are walking through the city at the end in that final scene, just look at the choreography of everything everyone is doing in the background. That's true through the whole movie. Anytime they're walking around the city, there is so much business going on in the background of people just going about their lives. And I mean, it just, I had to watch that scene again immediately. It just, because, you know, during the first time watching it, you're so caught up in the plot, you're not really watching that actively. But the second time, I just kept winding back to just look at all the little details and just the beauty of the sets in this movie. And I could watch it. I bought this on Blu-ray just because Brendan spoke so highly of it. And I'm so glad I did, because this is just such a rewatchable movie.
Yeah.
When the scene with the swing, when Lady Yang is in the swing, if you look at the people, they all are engaged. Like, because a lot of these movies, if there are people in the background, some of them start looking off at other things and doing things. In this one, everybody was looking at Lady Yang, but kind of engaging her in their own way. So it felt like, it's like if you went to a concert and you looked at all the people in the crowd, you have all these genuine expressions on the people's faces. They don't look like extras just kind of standing there trying to act like they're doing something. And I thought that was, I have to agree with you, that attention to the background details was really impressive. I think for me, when I first saw this, like, I think when it came out or the year after, but roughly around the time it came out. And I remember there were a slew of movies around this time that I was not enjoying. And I was just kind of like, I was like, okay, well, we'll watch this. But I didn't have high hopes. I was like, I like the idea, Legend of the Demon Cat, but I've seen a bunch of real bad fantasy martial arts movies in the past few years. And it was so surprising how good it was. And it was like one of these films where I saw it and I was like, oh my God, like, kind of like what was that movie? RRR, was that the movie we saw?
Yeah.
It was like that, where it's like, oh my God, all this beauty that I haven't had in movies, all of this experience, like it reminded me of the Titanic or Dracula, like that kind of, like it's pulling me into a world and it's painting all of this imagery. It's got some dark stuff going on, but there's also this like underlying admiration for a beautiful aesthetic that really draws you in. And it's like a work of art. Like the number one, it's all structured around this poem that the guy is working on, and it allows them to do all these wonderful things where they have this mystery going on. But as they get more and more information, the movie becomes more and more manic, and the poet becomes more and more enthusiastic in like describing what was going on in the past. And they have these flashbacks. And that flashback when they go, I forget what it was called, the Feast of something. Do you guys remember the Feast of Joy? Or it had a really nice name. But
you keep talking, I'll find it for
so,
you.
But there's this big feast to sort of admire the concubine of the emperor. And when they go back and do that, that's the scene that sort of reminded me of the Titanic, where you have this sense of this glorious past, but also this tragedy that overhangs all of it. And so you get these contrasting visuals of like a really opulent, lush looking reception hall where they have like a fountain of wine and everything is sort of like composed like a painting. It's kind of got like a Kubrick. If Kubrick were using CGI, it might kind of have that kind of like compositional structure to it. And it's contrasted with like the decay of what that place looks like in the present. Or in the reception hall after it's happened, and you see like all of the dead foliage, and it just is it's a beautiful movie, but it's also contrasts that beauty with decay and rot and time in a way that really hammers home the tragedy of the story.
Well, it's one of the things that increases the horror and the beauty of the movie is that contrast. You know, they really chose an incredibly beautiful actress to to play like the legendary beauty that's in this movie. And then the way she dies is so miserable. Like it's so shocking that the monk, when he discovers it, has like a panic attack. Like,
yeah. And that's, he's such the most cool collected character through the whole movie. When he has that panic attack, you're like, oh, it really hits you. Because I think that's the only time he loses his composition in the entire
movie. That's the only time he loses it. And that's what makes it so shocking. And and also it's like out of Poe. It's like, you know, there's the bloodstained claw marks on the inside of the coffin are
It's a good character beat too, because it just, you know, it's a very empathic thing to be horrified by too. I mean, I don't know. It just, that was such a great moment in the movie.
Also, she's a relatively composed character too.
Yes.
You never see it. You never see her struggling in the grave, and that makes it worse, because all you have is the evidence that they have. And I don't know. I think
this is like, you do it in your own mind. You see, they don't try and show you. They just let you picture it. It's fantastic.
But I also like how they play with the history, and they have the poem is sort of like, okay, like just the framing of it, I think really worked too. Do you know what I mean? Just this idea of like, and I guess it's based on a Japanese novel, which I have not been able to find in English. If anybody listening knows of an English translation, certainly let us know, because it's one that I've tried to track down. I think
it's a series too, and I'd be I'd like to read more books about these characters if they exist.
But. And some of his books are apparently translated into English, but they were just in genres that weren't as appealing to me as this one. Because I looked them up, and I found, like, on Amazon at least I saw some, but they were not, they didn't seem to be in this style. But I don't know. I like the idea of it, because I think, especially because we're all gamers and stuff, I just think that's like a really useful way to build a mystery, is take an event that happened and then create like a secret event that, you know, sort of explains and illuminates it. And you have this familiar part of the past, but there's sort of like a new mystery for the people to discover. And that's the experience you have as a viewer with this movie.
Yeah, and there's a lot of little your 20-year backstory, basically.
Yeah, your 20-year backstory.
And like, there's so many little character hooks that can give you different insights into this thing. Like, we see the perspective of a lot of the characters that wind up in that backstory, and we see them from each other's perspective, and it all kind of informs the central mystery in a really interesting way. It kind of goes along with that thing where there's no real background characters in this movie. Like, no one's like an extra in this movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you think like, oh, this is going to be a minor character that's just going to introduce in someone else's story. And then it turns out, oh, no, they're actually really, really important to the central mystery. Talking about the Crane brothers here.
The Crane brothers, just the way, for a while, you know, when the Japanese emissary, he becomes the viewpoint character for a while. Into his little story. And
now, what did you guys think of the, and we're gonna have spoilers here, I would imagine, but the explanation, the reveal of who the cat was that what you were expecting? Were you satisfied with that explanation?
Oh man, I like how many different, like, there's a lot of little ways into this mystery where it could be like, okay, the cat could be a lot of different people, right? Mm-hmm. It could be one of the previous emperors. It could be the lady that died. It could, especially with the clawing her way out of the grave thing, like that's kind of one-to-one. It could just be the cat. Maybe the cat decided it became a spirit cat, like a spirit fox thing. It could be any one of the many paramours she had. There's so many people. There's so many different ways it could go. So I'm perfectly satisfied with what we got, but I like that they keep it towards really close to the end of the movie. They're like, okay, who's it going to be? Let's see, you enjoy that wonderful, the sense of mystery in this horror mystery, which is really, really delicious.
I mean, it keeps it very supernatural. I mean, it's not overly explained. It's like, I feel I understand it, but it's not spelled out for you.
Well, yeah, when I first saw it, I almost wanted it to be Abby, because I thought, number one, the voice matched. I felt like the voice of Abby and the cat seem to be the same voice. But number two, I thought that had a little bit more emotional energy in it, in terms of like getting revenge, like being madly in love with Lady Yang and wanting revenge. But in reviewing it, I watched it twice this time as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought that they actually did a really good job of subtly inserting the motivation. I think it was White Crane, right, who ends up being the one who is the cat, where he forms this like connection to her because they're both orphans, and and she's nice to her, you know, and it's like, and it's like it, it, and it I thought that worked. I think the first time I saw it, I almost didn't even notice that, and you know, no, but now watching it, that's another thing I appreciate about the movie, is all the different pieces that fall into play like that. You know, down to like the what are those worms that they have that the foreshadowing of the worms in a very clever way.
As you say, the Crane brothers don't seem that important when you first. Yeah. That scene seems kind of a little tangent in the movie. You're not thinking of them as major players in this. But I think, too, it works. Because, I mean, part of the thing, it being this character you didn't expect, is that everybody seemed to fall in love with her. It's just it's basically her curse. Is that, you know, she's doomed to go through this world with every single person she meets falling passionately in love with her, which is
and they play with the history to sort of create that as sort of the, like, I think they have the An Lushan rebellion kind of be, it's almost like an Excalibur type situation, right, in this movie. Did you get that vibe? Whereas, you know, the reality is very different, but I thought it worked dramatically for the movie. It was a very, you know, and also it's got that sort of like, I don't know, that something about Mary thing going where,
or well, that what is a weird of, comparison, but
no, okay. But it is that thing where she is sort of this, this figure. Well, 'cause again, she's one of the four great beauties. So she's not just anybody. Do you know what I mean? She's like a very significant person in history. And she's kind of got the reputation of bringing an empire down, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, her beauty is so great, like an empire collapses. But
Helen of Troy, basically.
But like in reality, I guess, like, and again, I'm not as familiar with Tang as I am with Song Dynasty, so I might be getting some of this wrong. But my understanding is like the whole thing with like the, remember they show the brother's head when like her brother's head gets brought to the emperor at one point. I guess in real life, she was having relatives appointed to very powerful positions, which was part of the point of contention during the rebellion. But anyways, I thought that it was really a moving backstory. I like the idea of like this woman who's so beautiful that, you know, it's almost like, again, going back to RRR, movies are so jaded now. They can't even entertain the idea that there would be somebody so beautiful that it would cause this kind of a plot to unfurl. That's like, you know, like got, like it has like Shakespearean qualities or something to it.
This is very Shakespeare.
Up
to and including all the weird supernatural elements.
Well, even down to like that, we're going to give you a potion that'll make it seem like you're asleep for you're dead, and we're going to bury you. And then it goes horribly wrong. And, you know,
That plot never seems to work out ever.
Oh, no. And there's a Chinese story that has that same like Romeo and Juliet plot that they were probably created independently with down to like the magic potion that makes you seem dead and everything. I like a good tragedy. This really had all the thing that makes the movie work for me really is Bai's reaction to all this information that he's getting. Do you know what I mean? Like those are the scenes I really like, the scenes where he's getting emotional and manic, and maybe it's like the history student in me, but the idea of like this guy poring over documents and like realizing with horror that, you know, that things went down.
Wait, this is what really happened.
It's basically the Call of Cthulhu. He's just reading documents.
It has kind of a Call of Cthulhu or like an X-Files type just
a story about a guy reading pieces of paper. But
oh no. Sure,
of just the guy like up in the attic looking through papers. That would be my cinematic adaptation.
Occasionally whimpers in horror. Yeah.
But I like the way the characters are defined too, because it's like the monk he's the detective. He's just this genius detective character. And then you've got this scholar who he's put all his skill points into knowledge skills, and he's got the he bought contacts, and he's got the local area knowledge, and it's like he knows the, you know, it's like the monk is the outsider who's come in. He's got like the detective skills and the intelligence, and the other guy is his guide through that world that helps him figure it out. It works so well.
The parallel between him and Li Bai too is kind of nice, like that like connecting point somehow. You have the two poets sort of, like, you know.
Yes.
But
I really like our poet though. Like, I like that he just completely makes his own rules. Everybody, he just totally ignores all social norms. People are just like, yeah, but he's a poet.
But the other guy did too. Remember the other guy made what's his name? Gao? Was that his name?
Oh, yeah. Take his shoes off. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I guess that's just a poet thing. If you're a poet, you can just do whatever the hell you want in China.
I think you have to be talented. Though I think in the movie, the emperor does exile him.
Yeah, he does get exiled. So that was because he made a better poem than the emperor. I like that. That was great. It's like the emperor was all ready to present his poem to her. It's like, oh, the greatest poet in the world just gave her a poem. Damn it.
Exile him. Reward him richly and also exile him.
Yeah.
Go retire, you bastard. Yeah, that's really fun.
The emperor was pretty interesting too, I thought.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting character.
That's a guy who had command of every situation, man. He was an impressive figure.
Well, it's just, you didn't quite know what to make of him the whole way through. Because he's like, he's got very charming, disarming qualities, but he also seems very ruthless in a lot of ways. And so, like the scene where Abi, I guess, goes to profess his love to Lady Yang or whatever that moment was going to be. And he just totally, he like has such contempt for him that he doesn't even do anything about it. He just basically says, there's some calligraphy for you. And, you know, we're going to go. And I think, what did the calligraphy say? The greatest joy is to control other people.
It was absolutely owned.
But
what was Abe gonna do? You know, like, seriously, this is not only the emperor's like concubine, wife, whatever she was, but in addition to that, like, the guy knows. It's not like the emperor doesn't know that everybody who lays eyes on this lady falls in love with her. He's aware of that, so he's used to this. Like, this is four or five times a day. He's like, yeah, no, but I'm the emperor, so you need to leave. So like, I get Abe being like, I need to profess my love, but I also get the emperor being like, yeah, okay, I got like four other suitors after you to put in their place, so, you know, take a number, buddy. The moment when Abe realizes that and he's like, oh God, this is my life, this sucks. I feel so seen by that moment.
But I don't know, I like the guy that played the emperor.
Yeah, he did a really good job. Really, the casting in this movie is out of this world. They did a fantastic job casting this. I loved every single role. There's not one character who's dead weight in this. Like you said, even the background characters are so like alive and engaged with stuff.
We haven't even talked about
the general who, you know, is the one who the cat kind of is harassing early in the movie, for example.
Yep. Chen, right? Chen.
Chen.
And his wife.
Yeah, and it's like that. They're both fantastic characters.
Yeah, she's a really good actress. I like that lady. But
that was one of the things that got me into the movie. It's her reaction to that cat at the beginning. Just that very realistic of, I am gonna get out of here. She like runs into the house. It's just that was one of the most plausible reactions in a horror movie ever. It's like, this is bad.
And the visual of the cat sort of getting into her hair in that way, like, that really worked for me. I don't know. And also, she did a good job because she's sort of like, you don't know if she, like, how good or evil is this lady? Like, you don't really have a strong handle on it. And you don't know if, like, she a servant of the cat? Is she a victim of the cat? It was very, I thought, very well done.
It's the movie is really brilliant at being ambiguous about what's going on. It gives you enough that you can react to it, but not enough to explain itself until the very end. But it does ultimately explain itself in an extremely satisfying way. So that's hard to do in a movie. And it's beautifully well put together for that. And I like that they were kind of inconsequential. Like they were sort of like a little bit adjacent to the plot.
Well, he was a descendant of one of the people who buried the, but I thought also they're important parallels. She's a parallel to Lady Yang, I think. You know what I mean? And like, you get that sense because she's like another character where I think you're kind of meant to fall a little bit in love with her and then she dies. Do you know what I mean? And then Lady Yang,
she dies in a pretty miserable way too.
Yeah. Man, that scene is crazy. Just that kind of little dance that goes on. It's just so unearthly.
That music is great too. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
The band music that drives you insane. That was the most Call of Cthulhu moment in this whole thing. And it's very Call of Cthulhu. And that music, first of all, it wails. I got to get that on a soundtrack because I'm going to listen to that when I write at some point. And second of all, man, it was great in that scene. Like, the energy of it is so high and it's just off-putting and beautiful.
Whoa. No, they did a good job. Like the whole mood of that. And also like the how demented everybody started to look, like the guy that plays. The guy that plays Chen, just the look on his face when they go around that wall and then they come out and he's got this devious grin and then he's like choking her and then like after when he's, you know, he kind of like at first refuses to take responsibility and then he kind of goes crazy and but that also the thing I like about that scene too is that's the moment when you know the cat means business. You know what I mean? Like, it's done stuff before that, but dispensing with her in that way seems particularly cruel because she's basically just been helping it more than, you know, she hasn't really been doing anything to thwart the will of this cat, right?
Thwart the will of the cat. Yeah. Well, and you still don't know exactly what its motives are. So that's a very jarring scene in a lot of ways because you're like, but wasn't she helping you? It's like, well, I mean, I guess not enough.
I think the cat too. I don't. This is just pure interpretation on my part. And obviously, we have the person who is the cat, but I feel like the cat is also the cat. It's like they've
There's something going on there.
I feel like there's elements of both of them in there. I mean, like when she's possessed, when they're at the brothel and she comes down, just her movement. I love how feline her movements are when she comes out with the poison and everything, and just it's.
Well,
there's just so many little touches to this movie that are perfect.
What I liked about that, and to touch on the ambiguity thing, I think Joel had mentioned before, is one thing I was wondering is, because remember when he goes behind the wall, he says, "This is all your fault," to her, and then he kills her. And the woman that he had, that he entranced, that she carried the poison, she had a vendetta already against, I think it was named Yuli. And so my question was, how much of it is the cat actually, is like, does the cat need some kind of foundation of ill intent to work on?
Yeah.
Is the cat, or is the cat just facilitating something that they would want to do anyways? And
I had the same thought too. Yeah.
Yeah, because she already had a murderous look on her eyes before the cat took possession of her. So it's sort of...
Yeah, and the movie makes sure to know that we see that. Then it sequences the cat in there. So I think there is something to be said about, like, there needing to be some kind of evil doorway for it to enter. Because it never, like, it doesn't go inside the monk or the poet. They're pretty much pure heart, so...
Yeah, well, maybe and not I...
the poet, but...
I was wondering about that. Like, is it because of something like that, or is it because they're useful to him, or is it because
he's also fascinated. I mean, the cat wants the story to be told. He wants this. He wants the poem to be accurate. His concern with the poet is he just wants the poet to find out the truth. I think to an extent. That's just that interpretation.
That's a perfect interpretation though, because like that particular poet is obsessed with the truth, to the point where he'll like I don't have to work for the emperor. I want the truth. I'm not going to record a single lie.
Yeah, he gets
like,
fired for.
Like,
yeah,
dude, that's the emperor. Are you sure you can't tell one lie? Nope, not even one. So immediately, like that's the cat has a reason to keep him around if his whole goal is to get the truth out there.
Yeah,
which also just to make the point again, Li Bai also says that he can't lie. Like when he tells Lady Yang, the poem isn't about her. He's like, I can't lie. Like, you know, I have to tell you the truth. It's not about you. I don't know who the hell it's about. But I thought that was because what was it? They were trying to get him to basically say, look, the emperor died of like sickness or something. And he's like, no, there was like a cat in here. There was
you
like,
got to see all this crazy stuff that was going on. Yeah.
But yeah, that was an interesting character trait.
I really like that character too. Like, can we just talk about the poet for just a minute and just how much fun he is?
Yes.
I can see seeing yourself in that character, Brendan, because like, I get that. Well, cause like when he's going through the archives and he's just talking about like this amazing history that is like, oh, to have been alive then. And he's like, that this huge smile on his face. And he's like info dumping to his friend about it. And I'm like, that is the most I'm a historian moment I've ever seen portrayed in film.
It's so infectious, his joy of describing this. And you're just so, I mean, for one thing, I mean, the visuals are amazing in that scene. But on top, just his acting, just, you know, before they show it, when you kind of have that light shining on him and he's looking. I love, too, that they have the monk kind of looks up into space. It's like he's caught up in the spell this poet has binded, is just casting here. It's so good.
The other thing I like about the characters, when the monk has to kind of turn off the poetry, like there's a scene where like the woman has the worms in her and he says, you know, such beauty rotting like a dead flower. And he's like, hold on, okay, like stop it with the poetry for a moment. Like let's tend to better
man. We got work to do.
But yeah, it's also that's a really like, I don't know, just something about, you know, such beauty rotting like that. It's just like it doesn't feel artificial. It feels like a real thing a poet would say in the moment.
Yeah. I love the friendship between those two, too. I mean, it's the relationship between that. They're like two really smart people that have met each other. And it's like, hey, you're someone I can really talk to. It's like that thing that happens sometimes. And it just felt very believable through the whole thing.
The thing that starts their friendship is the recognition of one another's integrity, I think.
Yes.
And I think that's really cool. Their virtue winds up being the thing they lead with. And immediately you wind up loving the characters. Like what an easy way to start enjoying a character.
Yep.
Yeah. And I also, I think the monk is a very interesting character too, because like Adam was saying, he's so composed, but there are these moments where he'll like, again, the one in the coffin where he has a panic attack almost, and it's like jarring. Yeah. But then also the moment where like he dances briefly with Julian, and it looks so beautiful. Like it's like a very composed dance, and you could just sit there and watch the dance and listen to the music for another 20 minutes.
That was delightful.
Delightful is the perfect word for that.
It just had such grace of movement. Like it was something like, again, there's no martial arts in this movie that I can really remember, but that is one of the moments that sort of fills that kind of space for me in terms of like having something on screen that has that kind of physical poetry to it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, thing is too, I watched two versions of this movie. I watched the version on YouTube and I watched the Blu-ray version. And there's a difference in the subtitles when they go to the brothel, which I've talked to you guys about this, but for the audience, it's like, that's like almost a form of worship when he's kind of doing that little dance maneuver there. And
says, I'm here for the good music or something, right?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah. Which is
ironically leeching the poetry out of the sentiment.
I know. And it's not like you know, sometimes they change things because it's too hard a cultural concept or something. I'm like, I feel like anyone would get that. Yeah. It's, I mean, I'm sure not many people know who the Japanese goddess of music is, but whatever.
But well, also on the Amazon Prime version, it's the same subtitle as the YouTube, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what determines which subtitles you get. Also, we found out, we watched the version. I think that's the only version I've ever seen, but there's apparently a 2 hour and 9 minute version, right? That has an extra scene at the end.
The Wikipedia article does have the full version. It's got scenes, a scene at the end I haven't seen. So,
Okay. So, I mean, that would be interesting. I mean, I guess what that adds is a sense of closure for the Red Crane character, right? Like, that's the big difference.
I mean, I haven't seen the scene, but reading that little description on Wikipedia, I'm like, oh, that's a nice little coda there to the movie.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, you can sort of see that character becoming a monk, which the synopsis says happens, so that's kind of, you know, interesting. But yeah, I still like the way it ended. I like the
it's not a bad ending. I don't feel like it was terrible, but it is. I'm happy just knowing, reading a little of synopsis and being, oh, okay, that's nice.
But for me, the big thing about this movie is the way it looked and felt. It's the same thing that draws me to Bram Stoker's Dracula, or any movie that has that kind of I don't know, just that atmosphere that kind of takes me away, but isn't just like, you know, going on a ride or, you know, at Disneyland or something. It's got it's a well constructed movie. It has drama and you know, it moves me as well as, you know, sort of transports me to this beautiful landscape.
But it has a sense of both the grandiose and the personal. Like, it's a huge thing, but I can see where this appeals to you as a historian, because it's a huge thing that is very deliberately constructed out of all of the small things that compose it, all the little interpersonal dramas, all the tiny daily interactions and all of that. It's impressive to have a movie that has a scope as big as this one that still kind of has that almost like this incredible intimacy to it, you know? Like, usually, I'm a big Wes Anderson fan, and Wes Anderson is really good about movies that have that kind of personal energy to them. But it's rare that he has one that also has a scope as big as something like the Titanic. And this movie manages to bridge that gap really impressively. And it's, I don't know, it's warm and funny and personal in a way that really big idea, big scale movies rarely are. It's a pretty impressive achievement, honestly.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I'm not a historian. I just don't want to give the wrong impression here, but I get what you were saying. But
it's the most historian way to respond to being called a historian when you're not technically a historian.
But
Jesus Christ.
I do think the Titanic comparison is one of the most apt ones, because that really, it really does, even down to like, and I'm sure I don't think that they were pulling this plot from the Titanic, but down to like the love story with the Emperor and Abby, but it's almost in verse, whereas in the Titanic, the gentleman guy, the guy that's in the upper class, loses out. And then this one, the Emperor, you know, is the one that really, like, you know, wins out in the end.
Listen here, scrub, I'm the Emperor.
And not that Abby's a scrub, he's like an emissary from like Japan or something, but still, it's, you know, and I think it was a governor at one point in Vietnam.
Abe survives and the girl doesn't. So there's another flip on
that. Yeah. but it does just have that, I don't know, like, and I'm not the world's biggest Titanic fan, but one of the things I remember very much appreciating about it when it came out was that the way it sort of brought the present into contact with the past in like this very visceral, moving way, which I feel like it sort of spells out the doom that's to follow, but does so by showing you how beautiful all of the moments were that preceded that doom. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's kind of what this does. Also, it reminds me a little bit of I, Claudius, in the sense of, you know, you have like the scribe in the present, sort of, well, not the present, but their present.
There's a little I, Claudius to this too. But I mean, like, the problem with I, Claudius is that beyond everything about it, actually, factually and structurally, it's good, like really, really good. And so anytime something is good, I will compare it now to I, Claudius. It's like a philosopher's stone of achievement. It's really,
I, Claudius is, like, I mean, again, I don't want to go on a detour here, but I, Claudius is like a really good example of drama that's dialogue driven, I think. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what really makes I, Claudius work, is the characters and them talk. And if you can get into that, I, Claudius is amazing. I wonder if a movie like that or a show like that would do well in right now or not. I don't know how successful that kind of focus on dialogue is these days.
A lot of the times whenever something gets really popular, it's because it has a really dialogue heavy moment that, like, really is impactful with people.
Yeah, I mean, Game of Thrones was mostly people just talking to each other. That's like every fifth episode or so, they'd throw in a battle or something, but it was mainly just people in rooms talking.
No, that is true. But I would also say, like, something about that comparison makes me angry because that's...
Oh,
like,
it's not nearly as good as I, Claudius.
Not for that, but because, like, there's something... Like, I think you're right. I think dialogue is still pretty prevalent. I'm not as keyed into movies and shows that are current, I think. So I was kind of asking the question genuinely. But but I think with Game of Thrones, that's and Walking Dead is kind of the same way. But those feel like there's a lot of space filled by talking. But I, Claudius was different. I, Claudius was creating all this drama that really worked. And I don't know. There's probably another topic.
I mean, I think the problem with talkie shows now is that so much TV, it's always been pretty bad. I don't want to say TV in the 70s, TV dialogue was all fantastic. But it's just that it takes something that has significantly good dialogue to pull it off. And writing really good dialogue is a lot harder than, you know, having somebody punch somebody. Mm. It's a...
Are you saying Different Strokes didn't have good dialogue, Adam?
I mean, yes. Clearly that was the apex of writing for daytime television.
I don't know. What were there any characters that we've neglected to discuss?
Let me look at the list here.
I'm sure we've neglected a couple of them. This is a very full movie. It's a lot of characters here.
Well,
and we got the highlights, though.
I think we got everybody. I think we talked.
Yeah, about the only one that's leaping out at me that we didn't talk about isn't that significant, which is the old lady in waiting who gets killed by the cat.
An interesting scene. That was a very...
That was a good scene. But yeah.
I liked, too, that the cat didn't just go there and kill her just for talking. He went there and killed her because he found out new information about her. When I remembered the movie, for some reason, I thought, oh, he just goes and kill her just because. And then it's delightfully surprising when you watch it again. It's like, oh, no, he had a good reason for why he did that.
He had a reason. I would say
if for a demonic cat, that's a good reason, I would say.
Persuasive reason.
Yeah.
Justifiable within the story reason is what I would say. Yeah, a reason that made sense in the story.
I'm not saying I was rooting for the cat to murder her. I'm just saying that, you know.
I'm 100% team cat murder. So, I think my favorite part of that scene is when our monk and poet are walking away and they're discussing the facts of the case. And they're just like, well, okay, if that's the case, why didn't he kill the old lady? And then there's a beat and they go running back. They're like, oh God, he's going to kill the old lady.
Yeah, that was very well done.
That's brilliant.
They don't have that worry with Abe's wife, though, for some reason, I noticed.
Nah, she's fine.
Wait, who is Abe's wife?
The woman who gives them the journal.
Oh, yeah. Well, Abe wasn't... I don't know. I mean, I guess he was Abe was involved in it. So I don't know.
That was one of the inconsistencies I didn't get, is he said anybody who knew about it was to be killed. And I was no exception.
It's like, then, clearly you were an exception. You lived a long, healthy life after this.
Right? Am I wrong? And I mean, and they got around it with the cranes because it said they escaped the slaughter. But Abe...
Right. Well, maybe he was saying
maybe he was.
We don't know what happened to Abe.
He might have died. Actually, come to think of it, because remember, we're only hearing about him through his journal. He might have died, or he might have also.
Well,
escaped.
He lived until 770. So
okay, so yeah, he clearly escaped. There's another one though. The one that got me was that there's a dead cat. That's her cat, and also there's this living, not dead cat that's inhabited by Yellow Crane's souls. How many cats are there in this movie?
I don't know.
They find a cat skin and they're like, this is the source of cat.
I think the cat skin was like a husk. Like it was the husk that it kind of cast off. Maybe. I don't know. It's kind of what I'm not entirely sure.
Is that a different cat? same cat?
Yeah, like I say, I don't know. I did mean to watch that again and try and piece it together, and I didn't pay enough attention to that the second time.
Yeah, I don't know.
I find, because I thought the origin of the cat was that it was the cat that was in her tomb, and then it got mad, And then, because the first explanation we're given is the cat was in her tomb. She was buried alive. It got mad about that and then went on a quest for revenge. Then the second explanation we're given is that, oh, no, wait, they just took that cat out of there. And one of the two Crane brothers, when he took also her corpse out of there, got infested with demon worms and then put his soul in the cat and is on a quest for vengeance.
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, but he planted evidence that the original story, which I guess was a red herring, was real with the cat skin. So what the hell's going on with that?
I mean,
well, the cat didn't die in the tomb, though. The cat was alive for a while. Like,
right, I mean, right. But they don't find the cat skin in the tomb. They find the cat skin into the dude's bed.
That's yeah, true. I'm saying it didn't die in the tomb, though. It does get released from the tomb. Remember, they go back.
Right, but its explanation is that it found a way out of there, which, so that holds together. Like, as an explanation for why there's a demon cat, that worked great. And then we have another different explanation that contradicts that one, but it contradicts it in a way where it's like, well, wait a minute. Why is there evidence of the first wrong explanation then?
Well, I would say
planted a dead cat.
I think the demon cat was deliberately obfuscating things. Wasn't
his motive to tell the truth about everything? So why was he obfuscating things? Was he just obfuscating his involvement?
In that moment when he said that when he gave them the wrong backstory, he was lying. So
yeah. So, but later on, he wanted to give them the full truth. Does he want to obfuscate himself from the truth? So they just know the truth about what happened to the lady that he loved? Is that what he's
saying? Yeah, all he's concerned about is knowing the truth about the lady. I don't think he's really concerned about his story.
Yeah, because they guess that he's the cat. Remember, he guesses and he confirms it, but I don't think the cat ever actually tells them without provocation. But I think the husk is, remember how there's a talisman that they find in the palace that basically, maybe it's something like that. Like if he can make a talisman with writing on it, he could maybe make a cat husk. Or maybe there's an explanation in the book that just didn't make it into the film. Sort of like when we see him transfer his soul into the cat, I would imagine in the story there's probably a greater explanation of exactly what's going on there. But all we're able to deduce is he projects his soul into the cat and, ta-da.
They make a big thing about the cat's limp, too, and it's not clear where the cat got the limp. Does he have a limp because the guy had a limp?
I think it's a phantom limp. I think it's like a residual character
trait. I'm comfortable with that explanation. Finally, my last kind of question mark. I've only seen this once, and now you guys are my experts here.
Well, we're experts. But
100% experts. You got
I've
to
seen
know
it twice.
Well, there you go. That's twice as many times as I saw it. So okay. Earlier on in the film, we have... wasn't the emperor, it was the other guy. He takes a little key and he goes out and inside the key it says death to whoever uses this. What was happening in that scene?
Scene are you talking about?
Yeah, near the beginning of the movie, like when he goes to the old palace with the key, and there's kind of that kind of large thing he opens with all the multiple doors and it sets off the trap, and then
I don't know. That is kind of a It was a cool scene.
Yeah, I'm not sure what prompted him. I felt like there was something in the book that explained why he went there. But yeah, it was something. I was like, why is he going there? As far as little curse that's on the key, I mean, I don't know specifically about China, but writing little curses on things in the ancient world is just a thing. People, if you touch this, I will. Destroy
it could have been a reference to the traps
from beyond the grave and that kind of thing. But
why was he going there? What did that do for the plot?
That's why he's going there is the question. Yeah.
Yeah. What?
I don't know. I cannot not help with that.
Fair enough.
I'm pretty sure it's explained.
Even the second time I was really paying attention to that going, why is this happening? And I don't get it, but it is a great scene. So whatever.
I mean, that's a really beautiful interior. I think we do have to talk about the sets in general. The sets.
Yeah, the sets deserve a little bit of description.
Are unbelievable. Adam, what did you say? They took 5 years to build all the sets for this. Was that
according to Wikipedia? They spent 5 years building sets for this movie. Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a complete town almost at times. Like it's
It also says they were planning. They are planning to use it as a amusement park. It doesn't say this was 2017. I don't know if that happened or not, but
I know they have amusement parks.
I would visit that amusement park.
There's apparently like a Song Dynasty amusement park. That I think it's supposed to be like a city. Like I don't remember the details, but I mean that would make sense. But I think I don't know. I just like One thing I have a hard time with is when I, like, say I read a history book on China or something, or even when I see a movie, I don't always have a good handle on what the interior of the architecture feels like, what these spaces are like when people are actually living in them. And you got such a good sense, even if it's fabricated for the movie, you got such a good sense of that landscape of, like, you know, okay, this is her house. This is how the rooms all connect. This is how she walks from that boardwalk all the way up to her bedroom. And it all felt so connected. It was sort of like, it's like, I mean, movies do this all the time. They do clever edits to disguise the fact that there's, like, an exterior shot and then the interior of the house is nothing like. Do you know, but this almost doesn't do that. It's like it's like you're literally at a real house and it feels as real as a real house. And I think that adds a lot.
I mean, going along with how all the background scenes have all those people going through activity, like the beginning, the movie opens where they're out on that dock enjoying her meal when the cat shows up and everything. You're getting just this sense of people going about their lives through this whole movie. It's just.
Going on with that scene, there's a tracking shot where she runs into the house and runs through several rooms and then comes back. It's like one contiguous. I mean, I think there's a cut or two in there, but it feels like one shot. And it's showing her going through these rooms as one would naturally go through them. And it's connected really specifically to the outside shot. All movies like that. It's incredible. Yep.
And that just really gives me a sense of, like, it just puts me into the movie, like immerses me into the movie. Like you get that at the brothel too. Like the brothel, the tracking shot is when they're going in on the boat, I think. But it's like a similar thing where you're entering into the structure and then it's like it feels like a real place. Do you know what I mean? And it's also really wonderfully set up. It's got like it's all like there's I don't know exactly what the structure was, but it's on top of water. So it's kind of got it's this massive pleasure hotel on top.
Since you brought that scene up when they're going there on the boat too, I just love the monk's line about, you know, it's like, this is the Tang of romance. You know, this is what I came to China to see. This is fantastic. It fits well with just the whole theme of the movie and the past and everything. Yeah. That was, you know, when you're first watching, it's kind of a throwaway line. The second time I'm like, wow, that's just good thematic.
The other thing
is what this movie's entire about. Yeah.
What I also like is that guy's a real historical person too. Do you know what I mean? Like the monk, both characters are real historical people. And
the poem he writes is a real poem, which is fantastic too. So,
but it takes like a certain amount of playfulness to do that and do it comfortably. And I think that's what I like about the movie. I just like that. I do think sometimes, you know, some movies get maybe too caught up in, you know, like being accurate or being whatever. This, I feel like it's the right balance of, it feels real enough, but it also feels like there's a real story here too. It's not all wooden characters who are, sort of shackled to history and therefore they can't really do anything interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, not to say that history is uninteresting, just that the characters can't deviate from the historical record in any fun ways. They're able to make them into relatable characters.
How many times are you going to make me reference I, Claudius in this review, dude?
That's one of the reasons why I point to that show, because that's a show where they're real historical figures, but I don't think anybody ever imagined Augustus being that personality until, the book and the show, right? Yeah. But it works, right? Like it's the thing that makes him so compelling. And whereas if you look at the show Rome, where they almost go more with the marbled version of Augustus with a bit of weird S&M kink thrown in, it's off-putting. You know what I mean? It's like the one thing I don't like. I like the show Rome, but the one thing I don't like is how much I hate that Augustus compared to the Brian Blessed Augustus.
No, it's season two Augustus just doesn't work for me at all in that show.
And here I think they're doing something like that. They're doing, this is more like I, Claudius in style in terms of, we're going to bring these characters to life for you in a way that's fun, you know.
Well, as part of the movie too, is the fact that what you know about history isn't necessarily true, you know. Yeah. I mean, the theme of the movie itself gives them license to create these characters in their own way, so.
But yeah, so I don't know. I highly recommend this movie to people. I think it's, and again, I normally am the one who's like, this has CGI. I can't stand CGI. You know,
CGI works.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, there are parts that do look
a little clumsy places, here and there, but yeah.
You're so into the story. Those moments, like I would say the weakest CGI in the movie is when the old woman gets killed by the cat.
Yeah, like that, yeah, I would agree with that.
That just doesn't look good. But the movie is just so good that those little moments, I don't care. I just don't care.
And it's even like, in those moments, the color palettes at least all are coordinated, yes, and work. And so there's still something nice, even if it's like a shoddy CG, it's composed.
There's a passion to the effects in this movie. I mean, it's really trying to express something. It's not like where you're watching, you know, Marvel movie number 22, and it's like, okay, we've just got to throw a scene in here. I don't know.
Well, that was the thing that really struck me when I first saw this movie was, like, again, Marvel movies by that point to me struck me as very muddy looking and very ugly. Yes. And this was the complete opposite experience of that. And a lot of Chinese movies are like that. But this one in particular, like, pulled me in a way that I hadn't been pulled in a long time with film. I don't think every movie has to be this aesthetic, but it really works.
On the CGI thing too, the CGI is supplementary. I think the trick, like this is also true of, say, the Lord of the Rings movies, is that there is a lot of physicality to things. Like the sets in this movie are physical. It's like they're not, you know, I mean, you could have made this movie and made everything CGI and it would have looked terrible, but they only use CGI for the things they needed to use CGI for.
Yeah, they were in a real place, it felt like. It didn't feel like somebody standing just in front of a green screen and, like, lost, and not like there's a table next to them, but they have no idea that there's a table next to them, that kind of thing.
Yes. That's it. The CGI is supporting the physicality of the movie.
But yeah, so I don't know. We have any parting thoughts on this one before we close out, or anything we forgot to discuss?
I'm sure there's plenty we forgot. This is a big movie, man. Yeah. And not just big, but like dense. I felt like I just read an entire novel.
I'm going to watch this again this week, I think, at some point. I just really loved it.
Yeah, I got to watch this again. It's a rare movie I want to watch again immediately, especially a really dense, like, visual and challenging movie like this. It's a rare movie that was like, oh, I need to watch that again. Like, there's a lot of movies that are great that are dense and have lots of character. Like Titanic's a good example where I watched that movie once and I was like, yeah, I've had my lifetime supply of that.
I'm full.
I'm full. But with this one, I'm just like, oh, is that an entire platter of the exact same movie? I can't recommend it enough. And it's free. Like, just go to YouTube. It's free with ads. Like, man, watch this movie. Like, it's worth it.
I've been passing that link around going, watch this movie to people.
Don't watch this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a good movie. And
run it with Strange Tales of Songling, available now.
Yeah.
Studio 2? Is that where it's at? Studio 2?
Strange Tales of Songling, which is sort of inspired by Pu Songling, which this has strong Pu Songling vibes.
Very powerful Pu Songling vibes. Yeah.
It's available in print at the Studio 2 website and in PDF at DriveThru, or you can go to my website and, you know, Bedrock Games, and, you know, you can find the link to both. But I I think it's a solid. You could definitely play both of these characters, I can say.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, immediately on watching this, my first thought was, I could do literally all of this with Strange Tales of Songling, and I've never wanted to run it more. So, high recommendation for this movie and Strange Tales of Songling. There, that's your advertisement.
So, we'll head out, and until next time, we will talk to you later.